So last week I spoke about the experience of one who was the offender. That is when we cause harm to somebody else. Today I want to talk about the experience of being offended on the other side of the coin. I'm actually even going to invite Ian to bring me my notes because they're so far away. But the reason that I'm kind of tied up today is because too many people live their life like this. Too many Christians live their life like this. They try to parent like this. They try to start a new relationship like this. They try to make plans for the future while they are like this. And of course, they try to direct others to forgive while they are like this. They are bound by pain and anger. Sometimes they're aware of it, and sometimes they're not. But when you are on the other side of pain, when you are the offended one, this is what ends up happening to us. Things happen maybe once, maybe twice, and we start to feel a bit more bound, whether we realize it or not. And this is why I want to talk about forgiveness as a spiritual discipline. Because we live in a world where we're constantly bombarded by opportunities to be offended or hurt. Okay? And sometimes these are legitimate. There is real pain and real hurt that we experience. And sometimes we just simply are offended because we're offended. There's a difference of opinion, perspective that we might have. I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way, but or conflict arises any time there's a distance between our expectations and our experiences, right? So any gap between our experiences causes pain. It causes hurt. It causes angst. It's interesting in James chapter 4, we read this. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire, so you want something, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, you want something, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you do ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. And so James points out from the very get-go, what causes fights and quarrels? Like what causes this angst that we experience, whether real or just perceived? It's because we don't get what we want. And there's this issue when it comes to the desires that are actually within us. I really love how Andy Stanley, a pastor over in the US, framed some of these desires of the heart. I want to share these with you. He calls them enemies of the heart. He says, guilt is what takes our heart captive when we feel like I owe you something. I owe you something and I experience guilt. When I feel like you owe me something, I experience anger. You owe me. I didn't get what I want. Now, greed is when I feel like I owe me something and that can take our heart captive. And jealousy is when we feel like God owes me something. Isn't that a great way of thinking about it? These enemies of heart, guilt, anger, greed, jealousy, they all come from this gap that exists between expectations and our experience. And today I want to focus on this one, anger. You owe me. Because as we talk about the spiritual discipline of forgiveness, we need to recognize that the choice to not forgive is actually the choice of revenge. So the choice not to forgive, and it is a choice, is actually to make a choice, and that is the choice of revenge. And that is perpetuating the cycle of pain, of anger. We designate ourselves as the newest member of the Justice League, right? And our verdict, they ought to be punished, right? Now, of course, for a lot of people, we're like, I'm not an angry person, right? It's It's like I don't go out there and I don't create carnage and chaos, and I don't go out there to deliberately destroy someone else's life, but we recognize that there can be both active and kind of passive versions of this revenge. A revenge that we have chosen when we choose not to forgive. When we choose that in our place of captivity, that is our option. You know, some people do produce revenge. We just call that kind of, that can be slander, you know. I just remember even from a sermon a couple of weeks ago, you know, when Jesus is healing people and then the people from Jerusalem come down, he's like, he's empowered by the prince of demons, right? Now there's some slander for you, right? Okay. So sometimes revenge can be this kind of active slander. I'm going to get them back. They will suffer for what they did. But sometimes it's actually far more passive. It's still revenge, but it's something like this. I gave this to them, response that I wanted in return. And so next time, I'm just not going to give them my 100%. I'm not going to give them my best because my best wasn't valued. It wasn't appreciated. And so next time, they can get 75. And that's another form of passive revenge. And I'm perpetuating this cycle of pain as I choose not to engage with forgiveness. And there's a warning in this when it comes to a spiritual discipline, because unforgiveness doesn't just affect that relationship, that interaction that you have had with that person. It actually flows and grows into every part of life. Over time, the situations that are left unresolved get hotter and hotter. Maybe we experience that same situation in another setting, and our response is like so much more volatile than we had in the first case. And we're like, whoa, that blew me up. Why is that? I mean, this person cut me off in traffic. And yet at the same time, I've been cut off in traffic so many times and actually it's becoming a bit of an issue. I'm a bit bound by my response, people's disrespect on the road. Or somebody brings a bad attitude into a meeting or a student in a classroom and suddenly it puts us on edge. Why are you behaving that way? And we feel the heat of a situation that isn't even about that student or that person, but it's the heat of unresolved tension, hurt, that we've never actually dealt with. We've just decided to move on. But again, it grows, not just my relationship with that relationship with everyone. We become more and more bound by more and more hurt, and we become more and more suspicious of people in the process. We start believing that people won't give us their best. We start believing that people will hurt us, and we anticipate that. And we can live in that space. Many people do, all the time. All the time. But Jesus says there is a better way. And this is what I want to tell you today. Jesus actually says there is a better way than being this person. We can choose to be this person. Many people live this way. There is a better way. You see, forgiveness is the choice to break the cycle of revenge. I don't know how you've been exposed to this concept of forgiveness before, but that is what forgiveness is. It's a choice to break the cycle of revenge. It's saying, I will not allow what this person did to me to control me any longer. Like, I'm not going to allow what this person did to me as the offended one control me, to bind me any longer. So forgiveness is this letting go of our desire to hurt someone like we have been hurt, and releasing this to God. In fact, Paul the Apostle, Romans chapter 12, verse 19, he says, do not take revenge. He makes it really clear. He's like, he knows what's at stake. He knows what we are inclined to do. He says, do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God. Leave room for God. And I just love that phrase, because how much time and energy do we spend perpetuating the cycle, pushing God out of the equation because I need justice my way now, not realizing that by doing that, I am no freer than I ever was. Instead, God, you deal with this hurt with your perfect justice. And that is a very different kind of justice to which we can offer. Forgiveness is a choice to break the cycle of revenge. It's a setting of yourself free while entrusting perfect justice to God. And it's not an easy thing to do. That's why we need to talk about it. And that's why as Christians, as followers of Jesus who said there is a better way, we ought to be an example in our workplaces, in our families that demonstrate this kind of trust. Jesus makes a big deal and emphasizes this need to keep on forgiving. And is there any wonder when really what he wants is for us to experience the freedom that God created us to experience? Jesus knows what is at stake for us and for those we will influence. Our reading from today, Matthew 18, 21 to 22, it says, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? And I have to wonder when Peter was asking this, whether he felt like he was being generous or not. You know what I mean? Like we don't actually know. Like, was he kind of going, oh, I was thinking five, but I'll knock a couple of extra just in case, right? But like seven times? And Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Now, just to be clear, Jesus is not asking you to get a table with 77 columns. 77, that's seven combination in Jewish thought, it's numerology, and it's designed to represent ongoing, endless forgiveness. Why? Not so this person gets away with their behavior, is because Jesus does not want you to be like this, right? So why would you stop at 76? I created you for something more. But see, some people come across a teaching like this of Jesus and they go, I don't like this idea of forgiveness because it feels like by forgiving, I'm letting people get away with stuff, right? That's the pushback. You can see it in some people's faces. They're like, that's all well and good, Gavin, but I don't want people to get away with what they did. And I ask, do you think this is what Jesus wants? Does he want just people to get away with whatever they do? Of course not. And so I want to be really clear, even as we talk about this reality and what Jesus desires for us, I want to be really clear about what forgiveness is not. Because forgiveness is not a bunch of things as well. And I'm going to try and untie myself as I go through these. So let's see how we go. First of all, forgiveness is not condoning. Some people think that when they forgive somebody, they're essentially saying it's okay to do this, or acting like what they did is not significant. But these are two different things. To forgive or to release somebody in the depths of your heart is actually to live free from bitterness, resentment, and hate. And that is a very different thing to condoning their behavior. So forgiveness is not condoning. Here's a big one. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Let that begin. Because some people are going to hurt us over and over again. Some people have toxic and destructive tendencies. And sometimes it's necessary to put up some really strong boundaries, right? In order to protect yourself from that hurt and to protect others so that they won't be hurt again. And we might forgive them, and we should forgive them, but as part of that process of forgiveness, we may not be able to be around them as much as we once were. Forgiving is actually not forgetting. Forgiving is remembering and being wise about that. But you can remember and still not be bound. Here's another thing. Forgiveness is not always reconciling, right? Reconciling actually requires two people to be on the same page. And often this will not be the case. We can forgive people and we should strive for reconciliation where that is absolutely possible. But things will not always go back to the way that they once were. The other person may move away. They may pass away, right? And things can't go back to once how they once were. Two people can't enter into that conversation. So what then? Do we just continue to be bound? No. Jesus has more for you than that. Forgiveness is a different issue to justice and consequences. Okay? It's okay to call the police on somebody if they break into your house and steal your stuff. It's okay. It doesn't mean, hey, do you want my iPad as well? It's a different issue. If they did something and there's legal consequences, that's a different issue to you forgiving them. Here's a tricky one. Forgiveness is not impersonal. You forgive people, not institutions. And sometimes when you feel like an institution has hurt you, it can take some time to find the people that you need to engage with in order to be able to build that forgiveness back in. But organizations and faceless groups, it's really hard to forgive a business. Right? Hurt is personal. Somebody wronged you, somebody attacked you. And some people feel stuck because they feel like they can't forgive a faceless institution. Find out who can represent that institution. Have a conversation. Don't remain bound. And lastly, forgiveness is not always immediate. It's often a process. People can carry resentment and pain for years. And sometimes people expect you to forgive them in the moment. But forgiveness is something you often have to do over and over and over again. Sometimes you have to even slowly unlearn a bunch of behaviors that you've become familiar with, passive revenge even. But even if it isn't immediate, where would you rather be? Here or free? The spiritual discipline of forgiveness is choosing not to be bound, choosing to break that cycle of revenge. And so here's a question. Are you letting what somebody else did to you be given too much attention and too much power over your life? That's the chair question. Are you letting what somebody else did to you, and it may have been significant. I do not want to diminish the significance of pain and hurt and trauma. That is not what I'm doing here, all right? But are you letting what somebody else did to you be given too much attention and too much power over your life? It's not surprising that Jesus' own disciples had questions about personal forgiveness. Because this might surprise you, but personal forgiveness, the relationship that we have with each other, was actually a very new concept in the time of Jesus. I noted last week in Psalm 51 where David was confessing his sins and he says to God, "To you alone, against you alone have I sinned." And I made a little joke of kind of going, well, this guy was a homewrecker, right? He was an adulterer and a murderer. Like, he didn't just sin against God. I mean, this impacted people. But the perception at the time, and certainly during the time of Jesus, was that God was the only one who had the responsibility and the authority to forgive. Forgiveness was God's work, not ours. I want God to forgive me and I want God to forgive others, but that's his power, that's his prerogative, not mine. And yet Jesus actually introduced to his disciples and through his teachings this concept of personal forgiveness in quite a profound way. I've noted in previous sermons that when Jesus took the already present and very familiar Amida prayer, which we call the Lord's Prayer, the Amida, right? This was a common prayer of the day. You see many iterations of that in the first century. There was one significant distinction in how Jesus taught the Amidah to his disciples versus the other versions of this prayer that we see circulating at the same time. And it's this line in verse 12. All the other lines are familiar, but this line is distinct. Verse 12, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. This was his addition to the Amidah prayer, the prayer of sevens, the prayer that they would pray in groups of seven at the time. And he says, all this other stuff is good and true, continue to do that, but there's actually something I need to add, because God did not make you to live here. We can take it for granted, maybe, but it was actually revolutionary, this Jesus' insistence that we are actually invited into the forgiveness process. The way that we treat each other matters. And this thread runs through the entire Sermon on the Mount. The reason being is because forgiveness actually changes our hearts, going all the way back to the beginning, enemies of the heart. That's why Jesus made this such a high priority. And so my challenge to us as a community of faith, or wherever your faith might be at, will you choose to break the cycle? And that's why it's a discipline. It's a spiritual discipline because it takes work. It takes energy. It has an element of risk involved. And it's something that sometimes we need to do again and again and again. And yet it is so core to life lived as God created us to live. Will we choose God's way, really, is what we're asking. Like, will we choose to trust him and what he invited us to participate in? I mean, I think it's kind of interesting over the last few months. We've had this on the cards for like 8 months that we're going to preach on this. We've got Peacewise training in a couple of weeks, right? Which is all about that breaking the cycle. That's what this is about. That's what the training is about, because it's not always easy, but it is so necessary because it's a choice. But for each of us who choose to follow Jesus, if like that's where you have given your allegiance, forgiveness is not some sort of additional extra. It is actually core to the gospel, as is putting it into practice. We need to get off the chair. And so I want to invite you, as you consider where you're at, the things that might have bound you, to consider a few things. Number one, check your heart. Take a moment. Is there any anger there? Subtle or otherwise? Is there been a situation recently or in the past where you're like, they owe me? And that's become bound into my heart. It's taken up resonance. It's not just affecting that relationship, but it's actually affecting my relationship with everyone. You check our heart. Get specific about the hurt. What is it that they owed me? What is it that I missed out on? I wanted respect and I didn't get it. They stole this opportunity away from me and I didn't get it. Get specific. What do they owe me? And again, in line with this forgiveness piece, name the person. And I'm not saying get up here, get the mic and be like, this person hurt me. The good old act of revenge. But in your own mind, name them. Name the person. What they owed you. How it's owning your heart. It could be a parent. It could be an old work colleague. It could be a former or current pastor. Right? But name them. Be free. And then once you've done that, then you do the work of forgiving, saying, I am not going to let what happened to me define my actions any longer. I'm choosing to release this situation and entrust it to God. He will bring about perfect justice, whether it be in this life or not. That's not on our terms, right? But I'm going to entrust it to God. And then this one. Plan to forgive them again. Because it's probably going to need to happen. Plan, anticipate that you're going to need to forgive them again. The number of people I journey with and they're like, I forgave this person, yet still kind of keeps on cropping up. Yeah, of course. That had been sitting there for a long time, right? It doesn't just go away. And yet God created you for more. So I want us to do now, just take 60 seconds, and if you're joining us online, please do this as well. It's going to be quiet for just 60 seconds. Go through this process and just check your heart. Anyone I need to forgive? Are there any ways that I'm still bound? God, there's something better for you. Let's take that time. We take this moment to pause and be reminded that you demonstrated the greatest forgiveness. The God, you wanted us to live in captivity no longer. And God, for some of us, we're sitting here and we're really hurting. When we even hear a message on forgiveness, we want to push back. You don't know what they did to me, our heart screams. But God, you do. You know exactly what they did. And God, you also know what we have done to others. But God, thank you that even here in this temporary life, you invite us not to be bound by the actions of others, but rather have our lives defined by trust in you. And so, God, as hard as it may be for people, whether these offenses were big or small, I want to pray that each of us would be diligent in stepping forward and choosing to forgive today and tomorrow. Forgive us our debts, as we also forgive those who have sinned against us. You invite us to pray. Do that work and liberate us. In your mighty and powerful name we pray.